Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, I was just getting a bit confused there because I was going to say, yes, I read every science fiction book. This book, not really science fiction that I'm going to be reviewing today. This is called The Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon. Now, I don't have anything against a book which isn't science fiction. I like a lot of fantasy books, and there's lots of other kinds of forms of speculative fiction, which I just include here in the podcast. I don't mind having a broad tent, like a broad, wide open, what is it, church doors? Whatever the analogies that I'm going to use, I go, okay, give me something and I'll review it. I can make exceptions. I can twist the rules. I don't mind bending the rules of what is science fiction or what isn't science fiction. And even if the author is saying, ah, this is not science fiction, I'll be like, I'm going to treat it as science fiction or fantasy or speculative fiction. And if the author is saying this is definitely science fiction, that's good enough for me to say, okay, this is science fiction. Whereas The Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon, there's nothing about, I can't understand what it is that people said was science fictional enough or fantastical enough or speculative fictional enough for this to be eligible for awards like the Nebula Award and the Hugo Award. It won them both in 2007. Of course, that's why I'm reading it. I'm getting through all of the Hugler books, the Hugo Award winners, which is Hugo Award and Nebula Award for the same novel. I'm trying to get through all of those books and do a review of each. But this, it kind of just landed, and I was like, oh, this sounds really interesting. You know, the book, when it was sold to me, there's like, hey, there's this guy who won the Pulitzer Prize. Actually, that's the first exposure I had to this book. It was like the spine of the book at the bookshop around the corner was like, from the Pulitzer Prize winning author of The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, or whatever that book is, comes this book, and the title was like smaller than the title of the other book which won the Pulitzer Prize. I'm like, ah, oh, this guy is obviously a very good writer. Haven't read that other book, but you know, I'm really excited to read about it. And then it's like, oh, it's a book about instead of the, well, I guess there was the Second World War happened, but there was like an independent or semi independent, semi-autonomous state set up in Alaska, on some islands in Alaska, open for any Jews to come. So instead of being persecuted in Europe, it's like, hey, let's get as many people over here as possible and set up a place in an old Russian town, the old Russian capital of Alaska, when it was an Alaskan, when Alaska belonged to Russia. It's called a place called Sitka. It's like, hey, let's do it. Let's set up a Jewish state here. All the Jews come over. And I'm like, this is a fantastic idea. This is a really great idea. So the Holocaust still happened, but it wasn't so bad. The Jews are there, and this is set in the modern times, like in 2007. I guess it's set in 2007 when it was written. And I'm thinking, this sounds like a really interesting idea. However, that entire idea only takes up maybe three paragraphs or maybe three pages. Less than a full chapter of this book is going, and this is how the world is different. And if the world hadn't been different, that wouldn't have needed to be explained. The only reason why it's explained for that is to say, this event is happening, the world, or sorry, the Jewish, new Jewish land in Alaska is going to revert back to its original state. You know, it was only there for 60 years from the end of the Second World War. And now, you know, 60 years later, it's going to revert back to just normal Alaskan territory. And the Jews, some of them can stay then, some of them can't. And that's it. And that was about, you know, like say about maybe three or four pages, half a chapter or something. And I'm like, that is really interesting. But I'm almost halfway through this book. I'm not going to finish it, but I'm almost halfway through this book and just going, this isn't informing the story at all. There is a setting there. The setting is completely disconnected from the story. Like this book could be happening, this story could be happening anywhere. So, and then I'm thinking, well, what's the speculative fiction? Because fiction is just something has happened in the world and I'm writing about it, something that didn't happen in the world. That's what fiction is. I was talking to Juliana about this. I'm like, I say, what is alternate history? Is that an alternate history? Is that science fiction or is it just fiction? She's like, no, it's just fiction. It's just something that didn't happen. Well, that happened differently. And I'm like, yeah. So this book, like Michael Chabon didn't say it was science fiction or speculative fiction. It's not in that area. It's not in the science fiction section, but it did win the awards. And I'm just, so I was reading it and I was like, oh, well, this should be good. Because that setting is really interesting, but the setting doesn't play into the story at all. And once it's set up, it's just like, yeah, these Yiddish people, these Jewish people are just somewhere where it's cold and they're going to have to move away maybe in the future. And I'm like, great, that's it. That's the setup for the story. And then we get our main detective guy, who goes, "Ah, it's like a noir detective story set in Jewish Alaska." And I'm like, "Yeah, great, let's do this." But then, like I say, the other bit didn't play into it enough. I don't really like detective stories. I'm not a big fan of noir detective stories and crime stories like that. It just doesn't, there has to be something else there. There has to be like another element which brings me in. And here it didn't. It's just like, there is a crime. The crime needs solving. And so I was like, okay, well, so that the noir styling or the noir influence isn't going to get me. The detective story might not get me. But what else is there to go for me? So, okay, so the Alaskan setting, not doing it so well for me. The noir detective story, the characters, they're not really doing it for me either. So, okay, how about, like, the characters? And the characters are, let's say, the Jewish, but it's not like, I was going to say, it's not like normal Jewish people. I don't want to come off as anti-Semitic, but, like, the idea of Jewish culture as an interesting thing to write about, I wouldn't say in isolation, but it is very isolated. It's like, okay, this is now what it is. Now this is what the story will be about. It's going to be about Yiddish policemen. Everyone's speaking Yiddish. There's not a lot of it. There's no English in this book. It's all being translated kind of from Yiddish into English by the author from stuff that's being said in his head. But then a lot of it is like, okay, these people play chess. And I'm like, oh, okay, great, chess. But beyond that, like, they go here and they do that, and then it's the Sabbath, and they go and speak to the person who does this, and I'm just like, okay, what I'm getting now is being described to me is what the author finds interesting about Hasidic or Orthodox. I'm not really entirely clear what it is, but the Orthodox Jewish way of life, where they go, okay, in the Sabbath, you're not allowed to walk so many meters from your house, but we'll put string around the neighborhood so you're allowed to go anywhere in the neighborhood because that string is now the boundary of your house. And I'm like, okay, I find this, you know, this boundary, man, I find that preposterous and really depressing that people allow their lives to be lived in that way. And it's not, this isn't, for me, detached enough from reality, or it's too, I would say it's not detached enough to be satire, but it's like, it's not satire when all you're doing is describing what people actually do. It has to be, there has to be something else there. There has to be some other humor from it. And I guess I had the same problem when I was reading maybe the Canticle for Leibowitz about the Catholic Church. All I do is read a recounting of the human the failings of humanity in how they can persecute others and make life really difficult for themselves and others and perpetrate massive amounts of, I wouldn't say abuse, but just like, just shit way of treating other people. And just describing that to me doesn't make me feel, oh, that's really cute. And it would be cute if it was fictional. And I think this is one of those weird things about this is like, if these books were describing what it, like a fictional setup, like, okay, here, imagine this funny religion and that people are stupid enough to actually believe this stuff and it's actually let them inform their lives. Or not stupid enough, but uneducated enough. They haven't, like, it's obviously all utterly preposterous, but we're going to show people living in this way. And if it's fictional, you kind of get the benefit of a doubt saying, oh, but this is fictional. People wouldn't really be like that. And if it's fictional, you get, oh, that's a clever invention that you can come up with a new kind of religion with stupid rituals that people follow. But when it's not fiction, you don't get the benefit of having come up with it. It's just like, oh yeah, this is what, you know, Orthodox Jews do to separate themselves out from the normal population, which is fine. And they talk about this, which is fine. I've got nothing against people having different rituals, but when it's utterly preposterous, it's worse than fiction. It's like when something weird happens, you can say, well, that would never make a good book. It doesn't make a good story because it's too preposterous. There was too much random coincidence. That just isn't interesting when you do that, and then just somebody, something happens and it solves all the problems. And you're like, oh, that's what happened in real life. Yeah, it's like, well, that's an unsatisfying story. And you get the same kind of thing here with the world building. This could be interesting world building, but it just comes off as kind of slightly depressing and annoying that three or four chapters of the book in this first half of the book are just taken up as, and now they go and meet this person. Or what's this person's job? He deals with string. Or why does he do with string? He does that. And why does he do this? Because of this. It's just like, all of that. I'm just like, yes, I understand this. I know this. How about let's talk about more fictional stuff? How about let's talk about the World's Fair that happened in Sitka in the 1970s? You know, there's lots of different directions that this book could have taken, but it veered off. I mean, it started with a fun setting, or what could have been a fun setting, avoided that, went over into detective noir stuff. It's like, oh, there's this case. That's actually one interesting thing. It's like, you're not allowed to follow this case because when the territory reverts back to complete American control, we want no unsolved murders. We don't want no open cases. That's it, no open cases. So what are we going to do? We're just going to close the cases. Did anyone die? Doesn't matter. Just say it's written off as suicide. Just write it all off. And he's like, no, I'm going to go and solve this case. It's like, why? And it's like, it's not really explained. And then part of it's explained, but not really explained. And it's just like, well, why do I care about this? Nothing about that. All the Jewish stuff, cultural stuff, really annoying. I don't want to read about people with hats and strange beards and stuff like that. Again, it's not that I don't like Jewish people. It's just that I just don't find the recounting of kind of depressing cultural systems and societal systems set up, you know, just to, I don't know, it's weird. And then the thing, and it's like, oh, okay, and what's the other element? Is chess. So, and I really don't care about chess. I think, did I make any notes? No, I didn't actually make any notes about this book, did I? Let me see if I made any others. Maybe I did. Can't find them now. But no, chess doesn't interest me. There's nothing about chess which I find intrinsically worthy. You know, I don't find it interesting. And maybe if I got more into it intellectually and I understood it more, maybe I would find it more intellectually stimulating or fun. But I've never seen anyone playing chess who looks like they're enjoying themselves. I've never seen, and that's totally different from Scrabble and loads of other board games, all other board games. There's loads of stuff where you can look at it and go, people go, ah, yeah, great. Whereas at the end of a chess match, maybe it's just me, but I just see people like staring at each other and then they move something and at the end they just kind of go, ah, and they've done chess. And what is chess? Chess is I don't see the appeal because it's like intellectual work for the sake of intellectual work, which now that computers can beat people at chess, it kind of seems a bit, you know, I wouldn't say irrelevant. I mean, it's always been irrelevant, but it's like it's something for the sake of itself to such a point where it just disappears up its own arse. And it's not just me who thinks this. The main character thinks this of the book. Landsman, he's just like, I hate chess. When he was growing up, his father was a chess master trying to teach him chess. He's like, I don't like chess. I don't want anything to do with chess. And people just seem to like really, like even though everyone's playing chess, they don't like it. Landsman's father kills himself because of chess. And that's his only thing it was. And then he kills himself because of chess. And then you read about another guy who was like the world champion of chess who comes from Sitka as well. And he goes off. And then because the chess room changed, obviously mentally disturbed, and then he kills himself as well. And so when the book opens with like, hey, this person, this master chess person has been killed, I'm like, don't care. Because if the two other top chess players that I mentioned in the book both killed themselves, why would I care about this other person being killed when he's probably the kind of person who want to kill himself? Fast forward to me deciding not to read the book and then reading the plot summary on Yiddish Policeman's Union on Wikipedia. Guess what? Killed himself. Well, didn't kill himself, but asked someone, again, plot spoiler, but the same thing happened. And I was like, I'm so glad I didn't read on with this detective story about somebody who was mentally disturbed and liked chess because they probably just killed themselves anyway, and that's going to be the twist. And I had it right from the first two times when we were told that people who are mentally disturbed and really into chess killed themselves for no reason over chess issues, which weren't even to do with chess, they were just otherwise, but they were so wrapped up in chess that they couldn't deal with these other issues, so they killed themselves. And I'm like, well, that's probably what this guy did. And it turns out, by reading the Wikipedia page, that is what happened. I'm like, I know it's this weird thing, it's just like, how can I find this interesting when even the author of the book and or the person writing the book sees chess as this thing which to get good at you just have to kind of like be so distracted from real life that you want to kill yourself. And I feel that way about chess just watching people play. Every time I sit down and play chess, which I must admit I've not done for about 20 years, maybe I probably about 13 or 14 was the last time I played chess, but I sit down and look at chess. Oh, and I only did that because it was the battle chess on the Amiga 500 or whatever the thing was, and they would kind of walk over to each other, and you'd like a castle would change into a monster, and then eat a pawn, and then come back, and I'd be like, ah, that's really interesting. But I was just like, why? Like, I just need to. Like, why do I have to? why do I have to play chess to get these fun animations of monsters eating each other? And then I went back to real computer games and other board games where there was actually something fun going on. So anyway, chess, one of the least interesting things for me to read about. And this is what suddenly is, oh yes, and there was a chessboard left in place, and that chessboard with the pieces on it, make a note of those chessboard pieces, because that will be the thing that solves the problem later on, won't it? Yes, it was. Now think hard about those things. Yes, think hard about it, that chess. Yes, think hard about chess, because that will be the clue. Anyway, so I got halfway through this book. The Alaskan setting for the new Jewish nation, superficially interesting me, kind of made me interested in reading this book. It's not what the book is about. This book could be set anywhere where there is a dead body, people playing chess, maybe Jews or something like that, and where it's cold, so could be anywhere. They're not even speaking English, they're speaking Yiddish, so they could be anywhere. It could be any set of characters. That the alternate history stuff doesn't inform the plot at all, at least up until halfway through the book, which is where I got to. Chess, no thanks. Jewish culture stuff, no thanks, not really, unless it's a good story. Now, we do bring to something that I did actually quite like about it. There was one character I quite liked, which was the a guy called Berko, who is half Jewish and half of the, I can't remember the name of the tribe. I think it's the Tiglit or Tlingit tribe. Actually, go across to handy Wikipedia. Here we go. Nope, can't find. Oh, yeah, the Tlingit. The Alaskan native Tlingit. So there's a guy who's half Jewish and half Tlingit, and he's kind of interesting. And he's the only reason he's interesting is because he's not like every single one of the other characters. Because what Michael Chabon is really, really good at is that kind of Yiddish slash Jewish voice, that the style of that storytelling. It's really, really good. Loads of really fun kind of like literary mannerisms, I guess you could say. All of that kind of stuff. The writing is very, very good, but the narrator speaks in this kind of Yiddish-influenced Jewish joke-telling, storytelling style with all the really fun catchphrases and whatnot. Not so much catchphrases, but all of the phrases that they use and the words that they use, loads of the Yiddish is just left untranslated. You kind of got to work out from context what it means and what's going on. All of that's really great, but the narrator is speaking in that style all the time. And then when any of the characters speak, they all speak in that style all the time. And then you meet another character and they're kind of speaking that style, and another character, they're speaking this style. And what makes Berko fun is that he's doing that in that style, but you know, he doesn't look like the others. And other people are commenting, I was like, oh, that's the big Indian guy with a hammer who also has a beard and a hat and speaks Yiddish just as well as we, you know, this incongruity is interesting, but then it doesn't seem to lead anywhere. He's just like, oh yes, this is the drunken, down on his luck detective's partner who tries to keep him on the straight and narrow, who's the family man, who's got a family back home, and he does this. So while the writing for the first chapter, I was like, oh, his writing's really good. And then the second chapter, I was like, oh, this writing's really good. And then I realized it was just like a trick that was being played on me, that there's this wonderful writing with really boring story and subjects and topics going on underneath. And then the writing itself just became, it just fell into the background. Like if every single sentence is super hyped up stylistically, it just, it all kind of blends in together. It's not like there's normal English, normal English, normal English, and then characters start speaking and suddenly the characters come alive with that new language. It's like character, 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 character speaking, and then a character starts speaking, and then that's it. Another thing which annoyed me a little bit was it seemed to switch between present tense and past tense, which is it can be good in some books. Here it kind of works but kind of doesn't. Again, it kind of just jars me here. And then at some point, it'll just say something like, it'll just go into from third person, it'll just go into second person, like he says, does this. You come into a wainscoted hall, a door at the far end, on the left a wooden stair leading up to the second floor. The stairs and the right, blah, blah. And I'm just like, so now it's saying, so I am now who is coming in here? Or am I just someone coming up? Am I the person who's with the narrator, coming in with the narrator? Or am I now Berko, or am I now Landsman and stuff like that? And so sometimes it just seems to come, it hit me a bit too hard. Now, I really like some of that present tense or the continuous, I can't think of the technical word for it, but it's like, it's not like you do this. It's like, okay, so I go out at night with this girl and I do this and I do that. That can work. And it does have that fun kind of like I say, the Jewish joke telling kind of thing. It's like, say, you're in a pub and this happens and then this happens and this happens. It's not like that did happen to me. I was like, I'm in a pub, right? And this person says to me that. Not this person said to me that, but this. So it does work, but then again, it kind of just gets in the way. So overall, I've kind of meandered about this book. This book is just not for me. It's not science fiction enough for me. I don't like the topics, and so I'm going to leave it. But I can't give it a rating because it's so much not the book that I wanted. It's so much not the book that I was expecting. It's so much not for me that I don't want to call it a bad book. It's like me, instead of reviewing a science fiction book, there's just sort of like another genre book, like a romance book comes along, and I'm just like, I don't really do romance. I like romance in my science fiction. I like romance in my fantasy. I like romantic elements. It's like, I like some detective stuff in my science fiction, but it has to be more than that. You know, like a lot of Alistair Reynolds stuff is just like, hey, let's do some detective stuff. We'll have a space detective doing this and going there, and there's robots and stuff. I like that. But even then, when Alistair Reynolds did, okay, now I'm going to do noir stuff. It's going to be, they're going to be in Paris, and it's going to be this, and we'll always have Paris, and we're going to go there, and then we're going to, and suddenly there's spaceships. I'm just like, nah, the noir styling just isn't for me. So I'm going to leave this book unrated and unfinished. I only got halfway through. Judging by some other reviews that I just looked at though beforehand on Goodreads.com, it does pick up quite a bit in the second half. But even people said it's all the atmosphere drops out because it's suddenly like, oh, so I forgot the plot, got to do this, got to do that, and which is a real pity. But it is good to see here on Goodreads, 3.67 rating, which is actually quite low for one of these books, and 81 friends have reviewed it for Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. However, quite a few people have actually said, look, it's just not science fiction. Why was this nominated for the Hugo and Nebula? And I understand in a way it's because they're suddenly like, oh, it's alternative fiction. That's science fiction and fantasy enough. Yeah, right, great. And this author previously won a Pulitzer Prize. So now if this person wins like the Hugo and Nebula Award, but they previously won a Pulitzer Prize, it kind of felt like they're going, great, someone with literary credentials has written something in our genre, kind of. And let's just hitch our... It's kind of like the... What is it, the thing? You know, this author... the Hugo and Nebula Awards needed this author more than this author needed the Hugo and Nebula Awards. And it kind of felt like that to me a bit too much. You know, it's sort of like the award people were like, and the people who vote on the awards were like, if I say I voted for this and it won, it's sort of like, yes, we put our stamp of approval on someone who won a Pulitzer Prize. And I kind of understand that. I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just it seems to be just another reason why these books... a book which is so far removed from what would normally win a science fiction and fantasy literary award, that this book can kind of sneak in there and take it. But I don't think it's any better written. Actually, like I say, sentence by sentence is very well written, but as a book, might be very well written for a detective book. It's just not for me. So I'll leave it at that, unrated book. The last book that I've got to review in the Hugula award-winning series of reviews that I'm doing. I think I might do that as the next review, and that is Connie Willis's Blackout and All Clear. And so that will be coming up probably tomorrow, and I hope you enjoy that review as well. So that's it from me. You can become my friend on goodreads.com. Also, join up for the FBRP listener group on Goodreads. We're all chatting about stuff there, which is a lot of fun. Email me, luke@juggler.net. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge. That's it for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.